latest in college esports from the students that play.
Go behind the scenes at the schools that game.
The only place where esports are
on campus.
Welcome back to Checkpoint XP, your number one resource for collegiate esports and the world beyond. We have a very special guest joining us today by the name of James O'Hagan from the Academy of Esports, as well as the other litany of educational institutions. James, thank you so much for joining us today.
Norris, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so first of all, I want to start by saying, you know, what is the Academy of Esports? Can you tell us a little bit about it?
The Academy of Esports really is about 20 years of educational experience that I've had involved in elementary, middle, high school, looking at games and gaming experiences for kids in schools. And what I've done is I've taken the Academy of Esports and turned that into a podcast and a mantra and a belief of how we should be using esports in a K-12 environment in our schools.
Yeah. And so, you know, how did you get interested in this space? I know you have a background as an educator initially, but how did you sort of see this as an avenue to sort of expand upon?
I would say it really started about 20 years ago. I was teaching fifth grade students on the south suburbs of Chicago. And I had I called it a computer club at the time, and we really didn't have an idea what we were going to do. I was just asked as a new teacher, 23 years old, to come up with a computer club. So we did. But what I noticed was that we quickly switched from just doing computers into networking, and then we got into gaming. Specifically, we were playing a lot of StarCraft at the time. Mm. So this was about 1999. So StarCraft was, you know, kind of at its peak, I guess you could say, or coming up to it. And what I noticed was it wasn't just the kids in the room who were interested in playing the games. There was also a lot of kids who were interested in kind of just hanging out, just wanting to be around it, just wanting to be a part of something. It wasn't necessarily always about the games for them and the gameplay. Maybe they were interested in just the computers, or they were interested in just the networking, or maybe they just wanted to be with their friends and have a nice, safe social space for them to interact and have fun. And so, and again, this is before, you know, the internet really took off, when people were doing a lot of this stuff in their homes and connecting with other people elsewhere. So this was really a kind of a hub and a space. But what we found over the last 20 years, of course, is that schools by and large have thrown up their hands and said, you know, when social media started to come on the scene, they threw up their hands and said, well, we don't want to get involved in this space. We don't want to do anything here. And so what we've had are these kids who grew up with this Lord of the Flies experience, where they're kind of left to their own devices in social media. They're kind of left to their own devices in online spaces. And so what we've done is I took that idea from 20 years ago and really kind of expanded on it, and kind of through all my educational experience, really started to harness the idea of using esports, using competitive video gaming as an opportunity for us to help grow community, to help teach kids in authentic ways about digital citizenship, to teach them about healthy eating, healthy lifestyles, because a lot of the stereotypes around gaming is so negative. You know, we talk about online toxicity so much. We talk about Girlgate. We talk about, you know, bullying and cyberbullying and things like that. And what I found, and I got really good data and really good research, at least from the Scholar Gamer kids that I work with in Racine, that shows that what we're doing is providing kids safe spaces in which to play. There's kids who are coming back to gaming who left online gaming in the past. We're now coming back to it, embracing it, especially girls and especially children of color. We've seen a lot of those kids returning specifically to our gaming spaces because, again, we're providing them safety. We're providing them community. We're providing them something where they're intrinsically motivated to play. I mean, for our kids, this is where they're playing. And so what we're doing is we're taking all this and harnessing it into a really positive experience for all of them.
Well, and I think that's a really, you know, a great approach, because as we see, you know, esports continue to grow, as we see all the investment that's been going into it, especially over the last 2 to 3 years, it's really cool to see someone really focus on the youth and focus on the genesis of what becomes esports athletes and fans in the future. And so I'm curious, as you see all this new investment going into the space, you know, how do you sort of have that conversation with some of your students as they begin to age and grow in the program in terms of what the future of the industry might be?
Again, we're using this as a vehicle to get us into other things. So I think when I talk to my students, and we call them Scholar Gamers in the Racine District, we don't like calling them esports athletes because for whatever reason, that creates some kind of animosity. So I talk about Scholar Gamers because there's a scholarship aspect to this. There's an educational aspect to all of this. We're not doing away with the gaming, but we want to make sure we focus on the educational components. And a lot of the work that the University of California, Irvine has done, and Candace Steinkuhler, who's the professor there, her team has come up with this, basically, a lack of a better term, an ecosystem around which esports kind of lives and revolves, with the players and the gamers at the core. But when we talk about how we wish these kids could do all these amazing things in this hyper-connected world, we're authentically talking to kids about marketing and entrepreneurship and talking about IT support and healthy eating and healthy lifestyles. We're opening up avenues and conversations that in very extrinsic and unmotivating ways in schools, we've been trying to get kids interested in for years and years. But again, we're taking the games that they're already intrinsically loving to do and connecting them into this broader ecosystem that goes beyond the games. Where, I mean, I've got a great video from this last week. Five of our high school teams made it to the state finals here. All five of our Overwatch teams made it to the Wisconsin state finals.
That's amazing.
And one of our Smash teams made it to the state finals. And what we did was we did post-match interviews. And I can tell you that I see some kids who would not have had a conversation, a normal conversation with an adult, getting in front of a camera. And even after victory or defeat, talking about what that meant and how are they going to grow from it and what are they got to do to get better, or doing that real-time analysis. Those things where we talk about mindfulness all day. We talk about social-emotional learning all day. And really what we're providing, again, is this community, this sense of space, this sense of teamwork that for a lot of people, when they stereotypically look at video games, they see it as an isolating thing. They see it as something that is antisocial. And we're pivoting all that around and showing that this esports and gaming, especially at the K-12 level, can be a vital tool that we can use to engage kids to be pro-social, proactive, pro-healthy, think more about their futures than they've ever thought before. I know my kids, they look at you focus, I know, on the collegiate level. And I can tell you that my kids, if they had a choice between one school or another, and one had an esports team and the other one didn't, I can tell you that those kids are going to lean towards the college school that has the esports program. Well, in fact, we're working right now with one of our local technical colleges, Gateway Technical College. They're exploring how are they going to bring esports into their space. Right now, they have no athletic culture to speak of. They have no teams. And one of the issues they've got is they've got a school that's more of a commuter school. It's a two-year technical college. A lot of kids from Racine end up going to Gateway. But what happens is the kids go to college there, they go to their class and they get back in their cars and they go home, especially if they got 1 or 2 hours in between. They'll just leave campus. And I pitched to them the idea. I said, imagine if you could get a 14-year-old on your campus for 4 years before ever even considering college, getting them onto a campus, getting them into a social space where they feel comfortable on your college campus, where they can get to know staff, they can get to know the community, they can get to know the vibe and the feel of the school. I said, what's that worth to you to be able to potentially get another 50 students every year coming to your school who are going to be motivated to be there, who already know the culture and the climate of the school? I said, we're looking at, I look at all these schools, especially at the high school level, that are trying to build their esports arenas or trying to build out their space. And they're almost like they're doing it in silos. They're not looking at that whole ecosystem, that whole college aspect that you can connect into. Again, getting a 14-year-old on a college campus is, even in a social space, is something that we're not really exploring quite yet, I think, to its fullest potential.
Yeah, and I think that's a really amazing point, considering how much traditional sports is a part of campus life. I think as you build out an esports program, you have to think about doing the same for your esports program and making it intrinsic to what the campus is like. But I also want to pivot on to something that you were talking about a little bit earlier, and that's, the demographics of who you're seeing participate in your program. I think this is a really important point, and perhaps you can shed a little bit more light with us on, gaming has consistently been considered as the realm of, young white males. And we know now that those demographics are very different. So perhaps you could shed some light on that as to, at the youth level, what are we seeing in terms of participation in gaming and esports?
It takes a concerted effort to recruit. It really does. There's a belief, some people believe that, if I just set up this esports program, that the kids are just going to show up. And that is absolutely 0% not the case. Yes, you will get your stereotypical kids who will show up. But again, when we look at the demographics, when it's 97% of boys and 83% of girls, according to Pew Research, that are playing video games, that you're not just going to get these white males or Asian males. So what we've actually done is we've not only gone and recruited kids specifically, but also the general managers. I call them general managers instead of coaches, because a lot of them don't have gaming experience, but they're really passionate about bringing kids into this space. The general managers that I recruited are reflected in the environment of the student populations. For example, probably one of the best hires we got this year is Christina Wagner. She is a special ed teacher at the Real School. She comes with a world of gaming experience I didn't know she had when she said she wanted to do this. And you know, it's important for the girls to see that she has a leadership role, that that gaming is cool, that gaming is okay. In fact, in a couple of weeks, we have our for all our seventh and eighth grade girls in our middle schools, we do a kind of like a STEM and STEAM focused day just for them. We bring them down to UW Parkside and introduce them to all the different kinds of industries that women can get into, because we want to encourage engineering and math. And we're going to do an esports segment on that with Christina as the leader, as well as some of our female scholar gamers as well, too, in that space, so that they can see that, yeah, gaming is fun, gaming is cool. And while the games may not be something that you're interested in, we have a variety of different roles and a variety of different ways that we can engage you. We also know that we have to do a better job of encouraging casual gameplay. So not just the competitive side, but also bringing in those games that, hey, for 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to play this game and we're going to do it at this location, and we would really love to have you be part of it. Or just, hey, we're going to get together after school, and we still honor our our gaming programs that we have in our schools as well, too, to allow that casual gameplay to take place.
It's all right. But, you know, I think, again, these are all very important points as we see, you know, gaming sort of become the mainstream thing to do. And so knowing that, there's a lot of parents who I'm sure are incredibly skeptical of programs like yours. There are parents who may see the value in terms of it gives my kids something to do after school. But what sort of conversations have you had with parents or, you know, older siblings in some cases, in terms of selling these types of programs to the demographics, and, you know, what can come of it from the future for those students?
Well, I can tell you that, you know, let's talk about what if we get these kids involved, right? Let's just talk about that at a base level. We know that when we get kids involved in extracurricular activities in our high schools, two things happen. GPA goes up and attendance goes up. So if we can get kids just involved in some extracurricular activity, we know that that's going to impact our graduation rates in the long term, okay? With that said, yes, there are parents who do come in with these preconceived notions and stereotypes and prejudices about what gaming and gaming culture is. But again, we're developing our esports program around the philosophy that we want to do five things in our schools and as part of this program. Number one, we want to diversify the opportunities for student participation. A lot of times traditional sports are gender specific or ability specific. We want to make sure that everybody has a chance to do something as part of their schools. We also want to, as part of redefining athletic culture, we want to diversify opportunities for student participation. So we want to give kids more opportunities to be part of something in the schools that they identify with. We want to promote good mental and physical health. So again, when we talk about, you know, gaming as that stereotype of, you know, kids in a basement eating pizza, drinking Red Bull or Flamin' Hot, eating Flamin' Hots, things like that. We do exercise programs. We have a purposeful practice. Our practices run from this time to this time, and afterwards they're expected to do their schoolwork. We don't let them play for 8 to 10 hours a night like the pros would potentially. And then we also want to diversify those opportunities for collegiate and career pathways. We know that colleges are looking at kids and wanting to attract kids to their campuses, and they're giving them pretty lucrative scholarship opportunities. And the fact that these kids can play these games and potentially earn up to $20,000 or even a full ride per year for a college, though on average, I think it's about $9,000 a year right now, you know, that could make or break a college experience for a kid. And then finally, what we really want to do with all of this, and this is when it becomes really important, is we want to honor the importance of play in schools. You know, we've done a terrible job in the last 20 years of honoring just how important play is. We talk about a mental health crisis in this country. you know, and the mental health crisis, I feel, has been exacerbated by things like No Child Left Behind Act, which put a lot of focus on high stakes testing, put a lot of focus on sticking to the core subjects. And when we stuck to the core subjects and high stakes testing, what happened? You know, play went out the door. Recess times got cut. Music and art got cut. PE got cut. And what we have found is that this area of play is so important to the kids that when we talk to parents about this and say, this is really at the heart, giving your kids an opportunity to play in a constructive space that's safe, that's going to not hopefully produce any more toxicity that we see online, but actually help fight against it. Parents seem to buy in a lot. And sometimes it's a matter of bringing them out and letting them see it. I remember last year at the state finals we had in Fond du Lac, we had a scholar gamer whose grandmother came to the event. And I remember her standing next to me at one point, gripping my arm and saying to me, "This is so exciting." I'm like, "I know." Her grandson was playing Smash. So for a lot of parents, and that wasn't just the first reaction I got. There were several parents that day who went, "Oh my God, I didn't realize just how awesome this is. I didn't realize that this is more than just playing games," because it is. It really is. We're using this as a vehicle to get to all these other great things that we want to do with our students and our schools.
Well, James O'Hagan from the Academy of Esports, as well as gaming educator extraordinaire, I want to thank you for taking the time and talking to us and letting us know about really, you know, the future of where the industry is going, as well as how we can do better at combining education and gaming. Thank you so much. I know you're a busy man and you got to get ready for a big conference, but again, we appreciate you for joining us on Checkpoint XP on campus.
Thank you, Norris. Thank you for having me on.
There's going to be more. Actually, there's not going to be more, because this is going to be a special. So make sure that you guys are back, you know, for the next episode of Checkpoint XP on campus. Thank you again, James O'Hagan. And thank you, listeners, for listening. Take it easy.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.